Who the bloody hell's that?
Morning, Ange.
Ah, Anthony. How are we?
I'm really well. How are you?
Come on in.
I will do, thank you.
Did that sound staged?
Just a little.
No,
it's
fine. Yeah.
I'm going to embrace the whole lounge pant thing next time. I'm going to put my University of New Hampshire lounge pants on.
You should indeed.
You're listening to the Corona Diaries, a sometimes random and often irreverent attempt to understand the psyche of singer Steve Hogarth.
We'll start with an intro. How about that?
Can I record this as well?
If you've got the option.
I don't know. There's a little, it says record with a little red button on it.
Oh no, that's already working. That's already working. I've got a red flashing thing that says record in here. But to be fair, I had one of them last time. But I've got one of those. Mm. I have got one of those.
Well, I could press this leave, it says. Should I just leave?
No, should you just leave? I don't think we should introduce you to that as an option. I don't think H knows that option exists after 2 years. I think he would have taken
leave.
It by now.
All right, better crack on then, because I do.
Yeah, I'll shut up because I'll only ramble.
Right,
get on with it.
Hello and welcome to chapter 207 of the Corona Diaries for the second time.
Oh, I nearly got an again in before you, but you've owned up.
We've had a nightmare, or I've had a nightmare. We recorded a fantastic episode of TCD on what day was it? Was it Wednesday?
Yes,
yeah.
It was Wednesday afternoon.
Groundhog Day.
Groundhog Day. And we ended up with my vocal on a track. That recorded fine. We ended up with H's vocal. That recorded fine.
I got it at my end.
You've got it at your end.
Mm-hmm.
And not for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the point when the Zoom audio was supposed to be doing its thing and whatever it does at the end of the thing to give me the tracks, it all went wrong. And I ended up with no Ian's vocal.
Which was the whole point.
Because we did consider putting it out with Ian's vocal and letting you purples put in your own version of what Ian was saying.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
That could be something for the Christmas edition.
It could. Some expletive-ridden sort of...
Feck! Arsh! That kind of thing. Yeah.
So we're back on Friday night. So it's 6:10 on Friday night and we're back.
Yes.
Gosh. Oh, dear. So anyway, welcome, Ian, for the second time. Thank you very much. This is above and beyond this.
It is.
It's beyond.
It's beyond.
Taking the piss, Ian.
Taking the piss.
But we do know it.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Well, the main thing is to be spontaneous.
Well, fortunately, you're a cabbage and you'll have forgotten Wednesday completely by now. I know I have.
That's true, yeah.
Well, before we get on to the thing we should be talking about, which is Now Before It's Dark and Murder Machines specifically on our little quest to do this track by track, a couple of things we need to talk about. First and foremost, Marillion Weekends have been released, I believe, today.
Yes, yep. Lucy was on it all day today. So the fans seem quite excited. Some of them are complaining, why aren't we playing in Scunthorpe and stuff? But what can you do?
Yeah. Well, I mean, avoid Scunthorpe, I would have said.
Well,
when you come into Chile, well, I'd love to.
As soon as possible. Save money.
Saturday.
Well, for those who don't know, I'll quickly run through. So we've got Portsyland. These are all in 2025, folks. So Portsyland. 12th to the 16th of March. So does that mean that's a three-night gig for you guys?
Well, what it is, it's a new thing. We decided 3 nights on the bounce was a bit much at our age. Well, basically, singing for 3 nights on the bounce is not good, and I've stopped doing it when we tour. But I've had to do it at the weekends, and I've been complaining because by night three, I haven't really got the tools to do the job. Put it that way, and so someone, probably Lucy, because she does have all the good ideas, unless it's Mike, he has all the other good ideas. So one of them probably said, "Why don't you do Why don't you do Thursday? Have Friday night off and do Saturday and Sunday. And so that, I think that's the idea. So it's a four-nighter, but we will play three shows. But Friday night will be off for a knees up for the for everybody.
I think it'll be good.
That's a really good idea.
Not me, obviously. I won't have a knees up on Friday night, or I might as well have done three on the bounce. I'll be relaxing on a cushion.
Are we doing the band thing as well? I don't know if we are or not.
What band thing?
Meet the band thing.
When Lucy interviews us all.
Oh, yeah. Well, are we going to do that on the night off, yeah?
I could ask. She's in the other room.
Yeah.
Right.
Lucy. Saves us shouting at me.
For the purpose of the recording, Ian has now stepped out of the room.
Are you interviewing the band at Port Zealand?
Yes.
Oh dear, I think we all heard that.
How many times have I told you that? She lifts
her. Well, that was really quite good.
Do you want an omelette or not? So what day will that be on?
On the Friday.
On the Friday.
Her voice has gone up an octave. I don't know why you bother. All right, I'm going now. Thank you. Well, that's that sorted.
Yeah, I think we got the gist of that.
Yeah, she didn't get worked up at all.
No, not in the slightest. Good. So the extra night, yes, you will be doing Meet the Band on the Friday night, which is... now, you see, for PZ, most people tend to turn up on the Thursday anyway, don't they?
That's been the thing, yeah, increasingly, over the last few. We've been open in the estate, the site, call it what you will, the park, the leisure park. On the Thursday, if people wanted to come in and get settled. So they'll just have to come in and not get settled and, you know, queue up.
Yeah.
Can it be quite an event? I mean, this, I don't know if we're allowed to say, but it's the last one at Port Zealand.
Right.
So it's going to be emotional.
Are we allowed to ask why?
They're restructuring, rebuilding everything and putting where the... We call it the tent, the marquee. Where that was, it's in the car park. And we have it built every for every convention. They're going to refurbish the whole place and they're going to, where the tent's positioned, it's going to have about 5,000 solar panels put in.
Right.
So there's nowhere for a tent to be constructed.
Oh, be a good light show, just not much of a stage.
No. Oh dear.
Good for the sheep. Don't the sheep like to hide under solar panels?
Oh, do they?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. I think that's the thing. All right, okay. So that's PZ for the last time. That sounds like already sounds like an event. So well, let's have a, where are the others then? Hang on, let me have a quick look. So then you go to Montreal.
Oh yes.
28th to 30th of March.
Mm.
Then Paris, 11th to the 12th. So you're jetting about a bit, actually, aren't you? Because that's PZ, then a relatively long flight with a week. What you got? 12 days in between?
Yeah,
and then
that's enough time.
Another 12 days, and then you're back in Paris.
Yeah.
Girona.
Girona. It's very pretty there. Nice city.
Is that one of the new ones, then?
Yeah, that's one we haven't done before. Mm. I was talking to a Spanish journalist last night. I could have been dreaming, but I think I actually did it. And he said that Girona is one of the most beautiful towns in Spain. And if that's compared to Seville, it must be, you know, jaw-droppingly lovely.
Bloody pretty.
So looking forward to that. I've been before, actually. I did a solo show in Girona. That somehow Gabriel plugged me into. It was a record fair. And Hugh Cornwell from the Stranglers was supporting me.
And
I had a little chat with him. I said, what the fuck are you doing supporting me? And he went, oh, he was ever so nice. He didn't say, I don't fucking know. You know, he probably thought, I don't fucking know. But he never said it. He was too much of a gent to say
I love that
That's
story.
Good to hear that. So he was a nice chap.
He's lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
okay. We're going on a holiday in that neck of the woods in August, and we're having a couple of days in Girona, so I'll let you know what it's... Well, you say you've been, but I am looking forward to going. Everybody says it's lovely.
I think it's one of those places I've been without going. You know, I went and I did the show and just never got a chance to look at it.
All right, well, you need an extra couple of nights then on the convention days to, you know, have a mooch about.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
That's what is good about these conventions, is that we do spend some time in the cities rather than, you know, do a gig and clear off. So that's good.
Provided you can get out of bed in the morning, you have got the option to go and have a little look around, haven't you? Mm.
Well, we discovered last time that Ian's an early riser, so Ian will be up early.
No, I'm only an early riser at home.
Right, okay.
As soon as I get on the bus, I tend to stay up most of the night and then...
Have breakfast and go to bed.
Yeah, have breakfast, go back to bed and get up for the sound check.
Yeah, actually, we didn't touch on this last time because you like to talk to the bus driver, don't you?
I do. If it's Charlie, who's been our bus driver on and off for the last, I don't know, 30 years, he's such a lovely man, but he's a brilliant driver. Mm. And Scouser...
All right, Sage.
Yeah, he's always got some great stories.
I've had him on the podcast.
Have you?
And I was doing all right, Sage, and he was going all right, Sage, and you couldn't tell the difference, so I was quite proud of myself.
Literally that for an entire hour.
I'm often up there talking to him when we're on a, you know, overnighter, and he'll talk to me and I won't understand a word he's saying, and I'll just be going, yeah, yeah, Charlie, yeah. Oh, no, no, no. And if I think it's important, I say, sorry, Charlie, what is it you said? And then Lewis went up into the cabin one night and came out and said, I didn't understand a word Charlie was saying to me.
Well, he won't have understood anything Lewis said to him. So no, it would have been an interesting conversation.
Oh, the idea of Lewis chatting to Charlie, that's just, it's beautiful in itself, isn't it?
Yeah. It is indeed.
Yeah, just thinking about it makes you smile.
Yes, we should record it.
I think we should have, you know, two or three people along on our tours that don't do anything. They just are there for, you know, the vibe.
Well, yeah, we do that, don't we? Oh, no.
Yeah, well, we do. That's not the band, Ian. No, they do the things.
Well, at least now COVID's over, we don't have to talk to each other.
I mean, no.
Because, you know, during that tour, the band, we only saw each other, didn't we, on that tour with COVID. We were put into the gig, couldn't even mingle with the crew.
No, we weren't allowed to see anyone. And for the first three shows, we never saw Mark. Because he'd managed to contract it prior to the tour in order to help in his usual way. He'd managed to go down with it. And so we wouldn't allow him on the bus.
Mm.
So he was having to drive everywhere separately, which was pretty. And so there was just four of us on the bus. We weren't allowed to talk to the crew.
No, it was very strange. I remember doing, was it Glasgow? And Lucy came up to that gig and I wasn't allowed to see her either. Perfect. Some people would say.
We were in a bubble.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were in a four-man bubble that effectively, well, eventually when Mark got out of stir, became a five-man bubble. But that was it.
See, I always thought that the light at the end of the tunnel tour was named for the fans, but I didn't realise it was named for you four or you five for when you actually got the end and you could talk to somebody different.
It was the bubble at the end of the corridor tour, really. That's what we should have called it.
Mm. It was very strange, though, you know, doing a gig and not seeing anybody after the show. Very odd.
Mm. I used to wave at the crew, you know, in the afternoon. I'd go on my way to the dressing room that nobody was allowed into. I used to sort of wave gingerly at them and they used to wave gingerly back. It was a weird time, wasn't it? I've actually found a tiny bit of diary. Unfortunately, it's not very long, but that I wrote during that lockdown year on one of the studio days. So that'll be coming up later.
Oh, lovely. We'll carry on because I'm only halfway through the day. So Padua next?
Padua.
In Italy.
Yep.
Yeah, that was lovely, actually. I enjoyed that because we went to Venice for a couple of days before that gig and stayed there. That was very nice.
That was a good gig. It was an absolute cracker, as I remember. The show itself was fantastic. The audience were brilliant.
Yeah.
On the day we went back to the airport, before we left, I went for a walk with Phil Brown and we found a little square of grass and trees and it was a cuckoo. And we both stood there transfixed going, that's a cuckoo. I don't think I've ever heard one in real life. And it was going, woo, 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 woo. And we were going, whoop, what the fuck is it? Where the fuck is it? And we were trying to spot it, but we couldn't see it.
Then it's Leicester. 24th, 25th. No Sorry. Chance of a cuckoo in Leicester.
That's this week's episode title. There you are. You've nailed it, Ant.
Leicester, 24th, 25th of May.
De Montfort Hall.
De Montfort Hall.
They're good people at that place so far. Every time we've been there, all the staff there are so friendly.
Mm. It's a great venue. Oslo, 13th, 14th of June. And then you finish with Berlin.
Berlin.
Is that same gig we've done before?
Yes.
Is that the one? That is quite a big gig. That's nice. Mm.
So the additions. So is Girona's the only addition? You've played all
and
the others
Paris.
Before, haven't you?
We've not done Paris before.
Have you done Paris
not,
before?
Not on
for
a weekend, no. Or Oslo. Not done a weekend in Oslo. We've done Poland, haven't we, in the past?
That was
That's
Poland,
what we've
wasn't
done,
it?
But we're not doing Poland this time.
Well, them's the dates, folks. Them's the eight for next year. And you're going to be fairly knackered, aren't you, actually, because that's what? You've got 8 weekends over the course of 3 months?
Yeah, I think it'll be all right. I mean, we've got 12 days in between each of them, I think. The best part of a fortnight in between each two. I mean, provided nothing sensational occurs, you know. Falling off the stage, going to hospital, that kind of thing. Open heart surgery. Any of the above.
Any of the above.
Then it'll be a walk in the park, really. Be all right.
Now, the things we touched on last time, because obviously we're not going to go over everything we talked about last time. The one thing that did come to light last time, and this has worried me, actually. I've lost sleep on this, is... Ian, you've got a thing for marmalade, haven't you? Having not liked marmalade, you've then it's become a big part of your a big part of your life, really.
It's just one thing after the other with marmalade with me. I mean, I hit another crisis because I really found a marmalade that I loved, and it was Marks and Spencer's Sicilian Blood Orange Marmalade, and then suddenly they just stopped doing it. I was in shock. So then I found another one, Morrison's Sicilian Blood Orange Marmalade. So every few months I'd go into Morrison's and just buy a shelf full of the stuff. And then about a month ago I went in, nothing on the shelf. So I rang the head office and they said, no, we've stopped doing it. I said... What?
I didn't realise you'd rung the head office.
Oh, yeah. Well,
no. He firebombed the head office
I put
the following
thing
week.
On Facebook when Marks and Spencer stopped doing it, and people were sending me jars of bloody marmalade from all around the world. And but none of them were as good. So, I can't find any anywhere at the moment. I mean, I could go online and buy a jar for, you know, 10 Fortnum & Masons would do it for 11 quid a jar.
And they do it. Yeah. They do it. I found this out. See, I've been looking for blood orange marmalade for you.
You've been doing some research, have you?
Well, I have been doing a little. And what I've come up with, I think I found some middle ground for you. So obviously, looking at where you were buying from, so Marks & Spencer's probably put you in about the 4 quid a jar kind of territory, maybe?
Yeah, Morrison's was like £2 something.
I think Morrison's, because it was the Morrison's best marmalade, wasn't it?
That's right.
I've seen a picture of it.
We're going to start talking about Tupperware soon, aren't we?
We are. Well, no, we've done that. Because honestly, if I want a Tupperware conversation, I will go straight to the master. I'll go straight to Pete. But I feel like I'm on really solid ground here with you and marmalade. So Morrison's, I agree with you, is £2 odd. Mm. Now, Tiptree make it. And you can order it in singles, and it's something like £3.19. So I thought, price-wise, it's probably in the right sort of area, because Fortnum & Mason, everybody else, was £7-8 a go. So Tiptree do it. Now, I haven't found any local purveyors as yet, but you can order it directly from them on online. Don't know what the delivery cost is, but you were buying in bulk from Morrison's, I believe.
Yes, yeah, I just cleared the shelf. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Anne. I'll get on to that as soon as we finish, actually.
Yeah, well, I'll send it across. Now, the only thing is, I've read some of the reviews, because obviously I'm not a marmalade eater, but I wanted to be sure that it was okay. And the reviews are fine, apart from one that says there's too much peel. But I understand from our last chat, you like a bit of peel, don't you?
Yes, it's something that I think I mentioned it before. When I was a kid, I hated peel. But the older I get, the more peel, the better.
Yes. Mm.
I bet you quite liked Emma Peel, didn't you?
Emma Peel, I used to like her a lot, yeah.
Yeah. But Peel has since grown on you, hasn't it?
Well, it would, wouldn't it?
Oh, there's a marmalade and a peel joke here coming in there, but I'm not gonna sink so low. So I'll send you that across.
Thank you very much.
I think in the past I have bigged up Hamblin on the Iffley Road. And they're a bakery, really. And the chap that runs Hamblin used to be at Le Manoir with Raymond Blanc. So Sophie knows about him. Mm. And he's opened a little bakery up the Iffley Road in Oxford. And they do various, you know, breads and tarts and God knows what bakery things. But they also do a marmalade, and it's the best one I've ever had. And I had to lie down the first time I tasted their marmalade. And I bought about 12 jars. And I've definitely got some in the garage. So I'm going to bring you one in next week, just so you can savour the Hamblin and see how that measures up to your blood orange.
Oh, yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, well, that's nailed on, Ian. I'll bring one in.
I'm actually wondering whether for £2.10 we get you back in with a number of different marmalades and do some form of live tasting.
A trestle table that we could work our way along.
I think we should do that. Why we should be here, which is we're talking about Now Before It's Dark. We're talking about it in song by song. We're doing it in chronological order. If you've listened to the last two episodes, we've done Be Hard on Yourself, which Mark joined us for, and then we did Reprogram the Gene, which Pete joined us for, and obviously Ian's joined us twice to talk about Murder Machines. But we'll pick up on Murder Machines. But before we start, and I just want to clarify this because we did talk about this last time, Only a Kiss being the little instrumental bit that starts us off. Are we saying that's definitely part of the track then? Are we talking about them both?
I think of it as part of the track myself. And it's kind of nice live for me because we've just gone through the chaos of Be Hard on Yourself, usually, you know, when we're doing the album in its entirety. And it gives me a breathing space just to adjust any levels on my monitor system or just have a breath and look over at Lewis and see what he's up to. But I've always thought of it as part of the song.
Just while we're on that subject, actually, of you playing live, how much tweaking do you have to do through a set? Is it just a little bit at the beginning to it's kind of roughly all right and then a bit of tweak and then you're fine, or
it kind of varies? But a good gig is when I don't have to do anything with my monitor system, you know, because it's just a distraction really if I have to start tweaking things after every number. So yeah, a good gig is when I can just play and not think about all of that stuff. And I try and set my monitors at one level for the whole gig, so I don't have to mess about, or I don't program every track. So, you know, every track has got a different program setting. I don't do that. I don't do much tweaking at all. The main problem live usually is guitar levels.
Mm.
That's the thing that, and I try and leave that to our monitor man to keep an eye on that if he thinks something's going to blow my head off. There's nowhere to duck because, you know, with headphones on or in ears in the old days with monitors, I could sort of duck if something got too loud.
Lean out.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit the eject button.
Are you in ears or are you headphones?
Headphones. I do like in-ears, and I've got some in-ears, but the trouble is every time I take them out of the box, it takes me 20 minutes to unknot the cable, and I just get so fed up with that. And then sometimes when I'm playing with in-ears, a cable would drop out, and suddenly, you know, that's disastrous, especially if I'm playing to clicks. So what I like about headphones is you just put them on, and that's the end of it.
Yeah.
You know, it really is. They're very consistent. I suppose once a tour, I have to change the headphones because some of the low frequencies just turn them into mush sometimes. Yeah. So they can get destroyed. But headphones, just hassle-free compared with for me.
And I've never asked you about this, H, either, but it's obviously easy for you because you pop ears in and out all the time. But is there any crowd noise fed into your monitor? Do you know what's going on, or do you have to take your headphones off every track if you want to hear what's going on out front?
Well, I've got this button on my AVM system that, which is ambient button. So I can press that and I can hear the crowd then and hear what's going on out front.
Right.
That's just next to the ejector seat button. You've got to be really careful.
They'll be close together, unfortunately. But, I do like to hear what's going on as far as the audience. I mean, sometimes, you know, at the end of a number, I can't really hear much, and I take the headphones off and I go, wow, the reaction's amazing. So that's the only downside for me with wearing within ears and headphones, and tend to feel a bit isolated, I think. Mm. Whereas in the old days, I felt like it was a band on stage. It's the same as when we're watching a band. You know, if I'm watching a band from the side of a stage these days, because of all the in-ears and it's kind of all you hear is a drum kit and maybe a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, everything else is keyboards, bass, everything's just not there.
Well, same with guitars as well now. There's so many people using modelling amps with guitars that even guitar backlines become a thing of the past.
Really? One of the best bands I've ever seen from the side of a stage was Queen, while Freddie was still alive. And I was standing by the side of the stage. They walked on their first note. My jaw dropped. The sound was incredible. But that was before in-ears.
Yeah. Yeah, they played at silly volume, didn't they, as well? Brian played with quite an amount of noise, you know, quite a lot of ambient noise.
Yeah, he got up on stage with us once and played a number. It did sound fantastic, but it just obliterated everybody else. So it made me smile.
Right, so Only a Kiss is definitely part of the track. We're happy with that. any memories of it being recorded?
Nothing.
Okay, brilliant. Move on then. H? He's shaking his head there.
It was probably a jam that Mike found and went, oh, that's cool. Mm. You know, because we did have a different, as you pointed out, and we had a different intro on it when I first played it to you.
Mm.
I was a bit naughty and I slipped a rough, didn't I?
You did slip me a bit of rough, yes.
It's an old expression from the docks. I slipped you a rough and you had a listen. And but it had a different intro on it. But I think it was always this thought in Mike's head that it would have something that it kicked off from to give it another dimension. Because otherwise, you could argue it's just a very one dimensional thing. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but it is just on bam, one level, and you know, in a simple mind style, and not much of a break in it, and. So it bouncing off some kind of intro was always going to give it an extra facet.
Oh, I definitely do. I think it's really good, really good. When it kicks in out of that, it definitely works for me.
It's quite a romantic thing as well, an intro. So from the art fag that I am's point of view, You know, it's that undercurrent of romance right at the beginning of what is then something pretty tough is relevant. You know, sorry, Ian, what were you saying, dear chap?
I just remembered. I mean, last time I mentioned that I asked Mike about Murder Machines, the recording of it. I said, Mike, tell me, can you remember anything about it? He said, no, I can't. I said, oh. So I thought there's no hope, but we decided he was just lying. So I do remember the tempo thing. The tempo of Murder Machines was up and down. It was very slow as a demo, as a jam. And then we speeded it up for the recording, and then we speeded it up again for live. So, I mean, it's been said before, isn't it, that it's weird how so much of our stuff is so slow when you go back and listen to the albums.
Yeah. I think it's because we needed time to think what the next chord was.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. Give us a minute. The next
slow
chord.
It. Slow, hang on a minute. Slow it down.
No, we can play it faster on stage. We know it now.
Exactly. Yeah. That's kind of what happens, I think.
Because it is a fairly, you know, it's a fairly straight ahead song. It's a fair, particularly the first bit of it, it's kind of verse, chorus, and then it breaks a little, but it doesn't break far enough away that it's not unrecognisable.
No, it stays at the same tempo all the way through. And then that middle section, the breakdown in the middle section. But yeah, it's a pretty standard sort of song format, isn't it? For us, and it's what, four minutes long?
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. It's 4 minutes 20, and even with Only a Kiss, it comes in at less than 5 minutes, which is the shortest track. You have to go back to Happiness is the Road to find a track that's shorter than that. So that's, you know, that's a fair few albums to find a shorter, and there aren't many shorter tracks even on there. And I always think that Happiness has got quite a lot of kind of, particularly Essence, it seems to pass through things that are, you know, 3-4 minute things and then pass to something that's got a kind of concepty feel to it. Whereas this is what you would class as a, you know, kind of, not say standard rock and roll album track, but it feels like a, you know, a kind of an album track in that respect. So it is definitely uncomplicated. Is that fair? Is that unfair?
Straight ahead, I think, is probably what
straight
it
ahead's
is.
Better.
Well, it's the same. It's uncomplicated and straight ahead.
I mean, Marillion do have a habit of something that sounds, you know, is easy listening can be one of the hardest things because of some of the chord progressions in our songs. And so something that sounds simple, you go, oh, that sounds simple. But if you delve into it, it's not at all. And something that might sound complicated actually is simple. It's we've got it the wrong way around, really.
So is it complicated then in terms of playing it?
Not for me, it's not, because it's pretty... It's pretty straightforward.
Well, it is when Ableton slows down. Then it gets a bit
complicated.
Well, we'll
come to that in a minute. We'll come to playing it live. But H, is it complicated chordally? I mean, it doesn't sound it, but then to Ian's point, you're going to tell me, actually, no, that it moves around all over the place and there's loads of different bass notes and this, that and the other in it.
I have no idea about the bass notes because that's Trouser's area, but I don't think it's particularly complicated chordally. And I don't think, I mean, there are a lot of our songs where verse 2 and verse 1 sound exactly the same, but if you try and play them, you'll find the chords are totally different, you know, because they just can't help themselves. They have to vary everything.
I know an example of that, a good example, is Lucky Man.
Oh, my Christ.
When we
absolute
came to play
nightmare.
That.
Yeah, yeah. It's like bloody Calculus. You know, it sounds like a blues song, and then you try playing it.
It sounds really simple, but... Delve into it. Good night.
It's a horror. And no two verses are the same. But anyway, yeah, no, Murder Machines is quite straight ahead in an uncomplicated way. And the middle, the Reached Out, Never Thought, is the standard Marillion Chim Chimney introduction, which is the semitone descent. Now the ladder of life has been struck. You may think the sweep's on the bottom most rung. No, oh, I spends me time in the ashes and smoke. So we whenever we're desperate, we put that in. So it's all over our catalogue if the listeners want to the more musical listeners want to get stuck into that, send me a list of the Chim Chimney intro in our music. There you go. That's all. I'm just giving you a little look under the table there.
I'm going to be thinking of Dick Van Dyke now every week.
Well, I always do. I can't get away from him.
So in terms of lyrics, H, obviously it's got a pandemic-y theme to it. It's got a COVID-y pandemic-y theme, which would suggest it was written again at some point through the process rather than being on the shelf.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it just occurred to me one day that you know, you could put your arms around someone you love and kill them. And that was very, very unusual and strange and horrible. And that was a reality that a lot of people were living. You know, their parents or their grandparents, if they were to reach out and give them a hug, they might be killing them. And also at the beginning of the pandemic, I mean, we're looking back on it all now. But at the beginning, there was a real sort of underlying nervousness about exactly how is it spreading? What is it I could do that, or not do? You know, and then oh yeah, we all have to put masks on. And then Matt Hancock was on TV, and you can really trust him saying, you know, you need to be a meter away. And then it was 3 meters away, and then somebody else was getting up going, rubbish, it's only 6 inches, and nobody knew it. Everybody was you know, had got that feeling of uncertainty about how dangerous everything was. You know, how much danger am I in? And what if, in what is just an act of affection, I kill this person? And that was the realization that led to, you know, I put my arms around her and I killed her with love. But obviously, obviously to me, but that's probably because I wrote it, it's also a metaphor for love in general. So it's a love song. You know, you can abuse love to some degree and make a terrible mess of somebody. And they can make a terrible mess of you, you know, emotionally. And, you know, I've previous experience of that. So it works on those two levels. That it works as a love song, works as a sort of tragic love song. It also works on the level of jealousy as well. You know, she put her arms around him and she killed me. I threw that in on the last chorus. So there's an undercurrent of that, but then there's also a kind of an obvious level of it being purely about the pandemic and the transmission of a virus. And I suppose you could argue that, you know, if you were being really cynical, you could argue that love is like a virus. It'll do you as much damage. It gets under your skin, makes a mess of you. And all of that.
And it's constantly looking for another host.
Exactly.
I think I'm gonna keep quiet.
Hey, you just let me take the heat on that end.
Yeah.
I would if I were you.
It's a great chorus though, Steve.
It's a great chorus. And it's also one of the 3 tracks that you return to in Care, lyrically.
Yes, of course. Yeah, yeah, he put his arms around me. Yeah, but that I return to that in the sense of the ambulance crew that once came round here when Lynetta was very ill and literally lifted her out of the bed and, you know, and a big, strong guy. And I remember thinking, whoa, where would we be without these people? You know, this nurses aren't just, you know, lithe, tender women of a certain age. They're also big, burly, rugby-playing blokes who could effortlessly lift you, you know, lift a grown man up. Because you need those people as well. You need big, strong geezers to do that job, and they do. So I was thinking about all of those things. You know, he put his arms around me. And saved my life.
We'll have a quick break. We'll go to that bit of diary, but we're going to come back and talk about playing it live, because I know it's not a source of contention, but there's been history. There's been previous with Murder Machines and playing it live. So we'll come back and have a little bit of a chat about that. And then obviously we can't go without talking omelettes, so we'll do that as well right at the end. But in the meantime, H, do you want to take it away with this bit of diary?
Yes, I found a little bit of something I wrote and never finished it, but I wrote it during the pandemic. I think it was on my way to the studio during the lockdown, and it was kind of interesting to go back and be back in that place where we all were, because we so quickly forget. So here it comes. May 28th, 2020. Woke up and nearly got up for the third time. 6:45. Wondered why I sleep with my face on my left hand. Over the years, it has made a deep vertical line in my forehead. I guess that won't change now, so no point in altering the way I sleep. It's Thursday and I'm in the studio at noon, so we'll have to leave at 11:30. We're about a month into the COVID-19 coronavirus lockdown. A pandemic has swept the globe, and each government has told people to stay at home and try to avoid all contact with other people outside of household members as far as possible. The new normal sees people routinely wearing face masks and queuing spaced at a 3-metre distance to get into shops. Restaurants and pubs remain closed. Air travel has all but ceased, and the implications for businesses, small and large, are devastating. Live concerts have ceased globally, and no one has a clue when they'll be able to resume. Fortunately for Marillion, we'd coincidentally planned not to tour this year, but to remain in the studio to work on our next, 19th, studio album. We still had to cancel the rock cruise to the edge, and Lucy's still trying to persuade our US agent to part with the deposit he received. If we ever prize it out of him, we'll pay our crew for the lost work. The village shop only opens on Thursdays to sell bread and milk, and I've become used to the sight of a queue of people spaced apart and snaking across the village green outside the window. Lynetta had the idea of mounting a drive-in gig. Typically, the band reaction was, "It'll never work," and typically, artists are now doing them. Mind you, it would feel well weird standing on stage and playing to a car park full of cars. There's a load of hoo-ha on the news at the moment because Boris Johnson's genius PR man has broken the lockdown and gone driving. You know, the one who taught Boris to put that fictional figure on the side of a bus and repeat, "Get Brexit done," in answer to every question last year. Of course, Brexit is now forgotten by the media and will probably crash out without a deal at the end of the year, and our government will blame the economic trashing of the British economy on the virus. It'll have nothing to do with leaving Europe, of course.
And we're back.
Are you sure?
No, I'm absolutely sure. I'm absolutely sure. Listen, we should have just streamed it to everybody and then they definitely would have heard it once. So come on then. Pete mentioned something about murder machines when he was on, and saying to you, Ian, asking about playing it live, because then you will get a you'll get an expletive ridden rant for about a minute and a half. So tell us all about the challenges of playing Murder Machines live, at least at the beginning.
Well, the thing is, it was already, what we say, clicked up. You know, I'm playing to a click track. But then Mark discovered a new bit of technology called Ableton, which in theory is a really, it's a very good thing. You could do away with having a click track. I could count in a number, and if I speed up, Ableton speeds up with me. That's in theory. If I'd slow down, it'll just follow the drums. Apart from a click track, I've got a thing called Mr. Blinky, which is a flashing light in front of me. So I can look at this flashing light to see if I'm somewhere near the correct tempo, just so it doesn't get out of hand. Because with adrenaline pumping, you know, on those rare occasions when adrenaline pumps at our concerts, you know, things can tend to speed up, which is probably a good thing. You know, music should speed up and slow down, and it should. So Mark discovered Ableton, and we experimented with it in the studio. And the first time we tried it, I think if it was Murder Machines, I was sitting behind the kit in the studio, and Mark pressed the button, and I started playing, and it worked. You know, if I slowed down, the whole track would slow down with me. If I sped up, it'd follow me. But when it came to live, I don't know if it's because there's so many frequencies flying around. Ableton has got there's a microphone somewhere near the kit or on the bass drum or for Ableton to follow me. We started playing, and suddenly the track, I realized, was getting slower and slower. No matter what I was playing, it was just totally ignoring me. So that was a disaster. And it does work. I think it's probably a good thing. But a couple of times I've said to Mark, do away with this. I've got to just have a click. You know, I know where I am with a click.
What in exactly those terms, Ian? Exactly that phrase.
Turn the fucker off.
And of course, this is relevant because you have certain things that are programmed in on songs. So certain sound effects or this, that and the other that go on at parts of the song. So you have to be in time with the click or what have you, so that those things all happen at the right time.
I have to be spot on with the click. I mean, one beat out and everything's out of sync. You know, the projection would be
everything.
Out of sync. Everything, yeah.
Yeah. And so theoretically, what Ableton was allowing you to do was, if you varied time a little, it would follow you, but everything would then still fall at the same, you know, that crash or that chord or that whatever, that sound effect would still happen at the right time. That was the idea, wasn't it? To give it more of a live feel, and more of a, you know, not such a rigid kind of feel.
Yeah, I mean, if you're playing to loops, in theory, that's a great thing. But of course, then you've got bass player, guitarist on top of that. So everyone has to be really listening to each other. And it usually takes a few gigs anyway for us to settle down, you know, before it becomes that well-oiled machine. It's never safe. You should never let your guard down at our gigs. I mean, well, Steve knows, you know, you think, oh, it's going really well, and then something will happen that's never happened before, and it's just chaos.
A small fire.
Yeah.
Because Afraid of Sunlight's a bit like that, isn't it? Because Afraid of Sunlight at the beginning, the drums is, that's a sample, isn't it?
Well, that's how we used to, you know, over the years, that's what we used to do. We'd set up a drum loop, which more often than not was me playing anyway, but Mike could turn it into a loop. And that might run for 8 bars, 16 bars as an intro. And then the real drums, I'd come in and the loop would drop out. And so off we go again, you know, the band's playing again. But over the years, we've got more and more loops going and sequences. So it can be quite restrictive. But saying that, I mean, we do program the clicks more often than not to speed up and slow down as well, to make, because music really should speed up and slow down. So if you go into a chorus or, if you go into a chorus, it should speed up just a fraction, just to give it a bit of a kick. So Mike, bless him, is doing that all the time with clicks. And Mark's got it together as well. And I go over with Mark once we've done a, you know, rehearsal for a tour. I can sit with Mark and say, Mark, can you speed this up going into this section? Or, and it does seem to work. But yeah, it was. I think that was the first time was Afraid of Sunlight. Actually, was probably the first time we started using more loops.
Just the intro, yeah. And then there's that thing in between you and me as well that's very similar, you know, like, there's all these things going all the way through it, aren't there?
If that's out of sync with everybody, it just sounds like a train crash, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has been tricky. It's good these days, isn't it? We've managed to sort that out as well. It usually works quite well.
Mark's really... He seems to have really got things together. Plus, if things do go wrong, more often than not, we can say This Strange Engine, that track, it's kind of clicked up in sections, a lot of it. So if something goes horribly wrong in a section and Mark has to do away with the click because no one's in time with each other, then when it gets to the next section, Mark can reboot the click so we can start the next section. So... You know, we kind of avoid disasters.
Yeah, and TSE falls in sections like that, doesn't it? Where it actually has, I mean, not definite stops because you move into something else, but you'll have something quite frenetic that will stop and then it will go into a piano line or something where there's a break that allows that reset to happen.
Yeah, a lot of the tracks, Gaz is another track that is in sections like that.
I imagine there are quite a lot of fears like that, isn't it?
The New Kings was always seemed like a problem for a while, but the more we played it, the better it got. I remember we were doing a sound check in where were we, Steve? Was it in Germany?
Yeah, we were somewhere in Europe. We said, "Well, let's just run the New Kings."
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was bloody awful, wasn't it?
It sounded so dreadful. We just said, "Well, we can't play that." It really was awful.
I love the idea of you saying, let's give that a crack. Oh, God, that shit. No, that can't.
No, that does happen. There's only two things that can really go monstrously wrong, you know, with all of this technology. And if Ian can't hear the clicks, you know, if there's a monitor problem and he can't hear them, or if I've taken a lot of drugs and miss a verse out, or something like that, and I have been known to. It's very rare, but then we are in serious trouble then.
Or somebody hands you a cake at the beginning of Splintering Heart.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, that would do it, wouldn't it? You've probably covered that, haven't you?
We have covered that.
I remember playing one night, El Dorado was the opening track, wasn't it, to Fear. And I remember, and there's a big intro to it, and projection going on behind me, and then I get a 2-bar counting. So I'm sitting there, and suddenly I'm waiting for the counting, nothing, and the band starts. So we had to stop and start again because my monitors weren't on, so I didn't have a click track. So that's like getting knocked down in the first round, you know.
Yeah.
It took two or three more rounds to recover from that. You think, well, it's not an impressive start.
You have to know... Should we keep going and carry on? Am I confident that this is going to sort itself out? And every now and again, there's one where you go, no, we're actually fucked here. And the only thing we can do is stop and I'll deliver some kind of apology to the crowd and we'll start again.
Well, the one I remember, it's been documented anyway, probably, but I can't even remember which track it was, but we were playing. And Steve came out on stage to start singing, and then he just looked around and he said, I can't sing to that, and walked off.
That was one of those where I knew that this won't at any point sort itself out.
Yeah.
The only thing to do is leave. That was in Oslo.
Was it?
I walked off. Walked off and opened a bottle.
Stuff happens live, you know. It's not just us. It happens to the best of. I mean, I think it happened to Roger Waters on the one of his tours where they had to stop the show and start again. You know, and they spend millions on computer backups, and so it happens. Stuff happens live. Sometimes it can kind of break the ice, you know, from an audience point of view. When they see stuff happening live, going wrong live, it can break the ice. And also, if you're at that gig, it's one of those gigs you'll always remember, I should imagine.
Yeah, we talked about this a lot in the past. I mean, we've all been to so many gigs now that actually you remember the ones
Remember the ones that were right.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing worse, is there? Than I remember, you know, in the past going to a gig to see a band and something goes wrong and it's really bad vibes on stage and they're all, you know, really on each other and you think, oh dear, this is very embarrassing. Whereas if you go and see it, something goes wrong and the guys on stage are just making light of it and having a bit of a laugh about it, saying, well, sorry about that, well, let's do it again, you know. It does.
I've got two examples of that. I went to see U2 on the Joshua Tree and, you know, they've got this reputation for being a bit up themselves, haven't they? And I think Larry Mullen did a drum intro into something and it went completely wrong. And they all fucked it up. And Bono just said, well, that was a total fucking disaster, wasn't it? We'll start that again. And, of course, that was lovely. And then on the other hand, I went to see Bon Jovi on the Slippery When Wet tour when John Bon strutted onto the stage. It had just rained and he fell straight on his arse.
That was in Brazil.
Yeah, in Brazil. It was hysterically funny and he didn't see the funny side of it. And, he went strutting around shouting at the crew and asking for the stage to be dried, which made it 10 times funnier.
Yeah, I saw that. I was standing by the monitor desk with Roger Taylor from Queen when that happened.
Were you? I was out front.
Yeah, it was really funny. And Roger said, oh, dear, there's going to be trouble.
Dear, oh, dear.
Slippery when wet and he went, I'll save my set. It's brilliant.
Couldn't make it up.
We can't finish without talking about omelettes.
No.
Only because we ended up on omelettes last time.
Well, I watched a thing that Steve did with Lucy when he showed punters the attic at the Racquet Club, gave him a tour of it. And Lucy said, the subject of cooking came on. And Steve said, well, I don't do any cooking. The only thing I cook is omelettes. And Lucy said, that's exactly what Ian only cooks omelettes. So, in fact, tonight I've been summoned. I've got to cook an omelette for Lucy when this is over.
Right.
So that was quite interesting. So me and Steve have got something in common there. You know, we're good at omelettes. And you mentioned that something about grills last time we spoke about
And I got slightly offended about this post event because you both dismissed it as being. You know, particularly heathen, but if you're cooking an omelette and you put cheese in it and you want it to be, you know, sort of nicely finished off, then actually if you pop it under the grill for sort of 30 seconds, it the cheese bubbles and it's really nice.
No, that's not. Well, I don't even know where the grill is. I don't think we got a grill. But no, if you don't need a grill to do an omelette, that's not right.
It's wrong, Anthony. Sorry.
Last time, if the cheese was on
the outside, yes. If we're talking Welsh rarebit, yes.
Yes.
But if it's on the inside of a bloody omelette, what's the point of grilling it?
That's assuming you've folded it.
Of course I've folded it. Fold your omelettes.
Well, you don't have to fold your omelette if you put it under the grill.
What's going on in Heckmondwike?
Well, it's
unfold an omelette.
Unfold, yes, yes.
That's not an omelette, is it?
Good God.
You can't, you've got to fold an omelette.
Yes. It gives you time to get out to the garage for your marmalade store.
It's like having two disappointed parents. It's like a very modern family arrangement here with two disappointed dads.
Well, yeah. I think we've got more in common than we perhaps suspected, Ian.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a lot in common, really, Steve. But that's another episode.
I'm going to let you go, Ian. If you've got to make omelettes for Lucy, I'm the last person to want to get in the way of that.
I'm going to ask her where the grill is.
You will let us know. Come back and tell us if you've got a grill.
Yeah, well, it's an Instagram post. Mosley's Grill. I can see it. Better than Happy Days.
You'd never see an egg omelette station in any five-star hotel. You don't say to them, omelette, please, and could you put that under the grill for us?
They right, go, well, what? Well, hang on a minute. Hang on a minute here. I'm not... I think the point when you two are suggesting that you are have something in common with a five-star hotel omelette station, bearing in mind it's the only thing that either of you can cook, I think that's a little bit, you know, I think you've been a little bit harsh there.
It's another good episode title. That's two we've had now. Five-star omelette station.
I like five-star omelette station. Ian, thank you very much for being on twice, basically.
No, I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, I'll be on a flight to Portugal, so you'll be on your own.
Oh, yes, you've got a gig tomorrow night, haven't you?
I know.
Tomorrow night, Steve? Oh,
no. Well, no, I fly tomorrow. It's on Sunday night.
Where in Portugal?
Gouveia.
Gouveia?
Yeah, it's somewhere.
Yep. What are you flying into?
Porto.
Right.
Oh. It's up north. I've checked the weather. It's shit. It's like here.
No.
Yeah, it's raining and 9 degrees or something.
Oh, it is
not the Algarve. Man. So, don't feel jealous.
Right, we're definitely going. Steve, say goodbye.
Yeah, but bye-bye, everyone. Thanks for listening. Thank you to the legend that is Ian, the Count. And we'll see you all very soon. Well, we won't, but we'll hear you all. No, we won't hear you. You'll hear us. There we go, got there in the end.
Have a good gig, Steve, and I'll see you next week.
Indeed. Back jamming.
Hurrah.
I'll bring your marmalade in.
All right, thank you very much.
How does Bob Marley like his sandwiches?
Under the grill.
Under the grill. Yes, thanks, Ant. That's it. Right, everybody run off.
Thanks for listening to the Corona Diaries. It featured Steve Hogarth with the insights and me, Ant Short, with the questions. If you enjoyed the podcast, please consider subscribing and maybe leaving a review, as this will help others find it. You could even share with other like-minded souls, should the mood take you. This has been an A Short Stories production.